This is the Squeaky Bum Time Podcast, a CFCP production with Mike and Laurent.
Hey, hey, Mike. We're back. We're back. We're back and we're whack. We're going to review the Champions League groups that were up for grabs that just finished. So we wrapped up the group stage. We're going to talk about Inter. We're going to talk about Real Madrid. And then we're going to talk about Manchester United and their folly. Then we'll review what's going to go on and finish up with the Manchester Derby, my team, Manchester City, versus Manchester United. But we're going to start in Champions League Group B, 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 B. Mike, what happened in Group B?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. First and foremost, if you dislike Manchester United, strap in. You're going to enjoy this next hour or so.
Today's the day.
Today's your day, right? So yeah. We're going to shit on them about the Champions League exit, their impending Europa League exit in February, I suppose. And then we're going to talk about how City is going to lay some lumber on them this week. So, like I said, buckle in for that. But yeah, I mean, we talked about it on Monday. There were two groups that we were really, really watching and excited for this week. It was interesting that Real Madrid finally showed up and looked like Real Madrid, right? And they left no doubt.
They've got the juice, right? Like when I was looking for it, I was like, okay, I didn't watch the games. I just was like, let me see what happens. And I look it up. It's like 2-0 Benzema. I was like, of course.
It's going to be Benzema scores in the 9th and 21st or 27th minute.
Yeah.
They come out firing and they go bang, bang. And they were playing Shakhtar, right?
They were Gladbach, who's been
good. Playing Gladbach, sorry. Yes, they were playing Gladbach. So the team that ends up actually getting through in the group ends up kind of getting waxed by Madrid Tuesday. And it's interesting because the best part about the group stage is the last day. And when there are things like Group B where it comes down to I'm playing at the same time as the other guys, and I have no fucking clue what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to see it this time all that much. Actually, some of the players were doing this with their phones refreshing, trying to.
The Gladbach team was on the sideline looking at an iPad.
Okay. So that's what we had. But yeah, effectively, usually when there's 35,000 more fans in the stands, everybody's watching on the pitch, but they're also checking their phones and seeing all that stuff.
Mike,
my favorite example of that is Spurs fans in Barcelona trying to figure out if PSV is going to tie Inter or not. Right.
So I feel like we're burying the headline a little. There was a thing that happened today. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I was going to say, we'll get to that too.
Wait a minute. Something happened.
Yeah. I looked at the scores. I went, oh yeah,
that happened.
But so Gladbach, just to finish up Group B, Gladbach get beat up pretty good by Madrid. They only lose 2-0, but it's enough for them to go through because Shakhtar and Inter, they really didn't do much of anything. They played to a scoreless draw.
Right, but this is like a referendum on Conte, who, yes, he's won things, but there's something about his energy, his nervousness, the antics on the sideline that in these tournament games, he's had such a poor run in Champions League with Chelsea. He either burns out or his players are feeling his feelings or something with his mojo, just not mojoing. And it really, like, they just couldn't put in the chances. I mean, Inter had 20 shots, 4 on target, but I mean, and he just refuses for some reason to bring on Eriksen, brings him on like in the 95th minute. And he immediately starts changing things.
I'm smiling from ear to ear right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's something's weird with Eriksen. Like, I think it's his body language. I think he's like kind of so chill that makes coaches feel like he doesn't give a shit or something.
The weirdest thing about Eriksen is that he runs a lot. In the Pochettino years, he was running like 10 miles a game. He was all over the place. Right? He was the quintessential Pochettino press player. And that was the thing is that late on in his tenure at Spurs, he wasn't running that much and the fans let him have it. Right. And then he sort of, to make a baseball reference, he's sort of like Zach Greinke, where he just kind of wilted under the pressure a little bit. And he was like, I don't like all these people yelling at me all the fucking time.
And he played every minute of every game.
Right.
Oh, all for like 18 months. They ran him into the ground.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
We'll get to the United thing. But one of the things I think fans really don't get is like this idea that it's not the physical part that gets them into the ground. It's the it's the mental. It's just like,
I mean, it's both, but yeah, right. Exactly.
No, but it's not like they can't, it's not like, right. It's not that they can't, right. It's not when they say fitness, like, oh, he's not fit enough or things like that. It's this sharpness. It's the regularity. It's playing together. I mean, there's so much cohesion that goes into it. It's very rare for teams to have to lose their set 11. You can lose one guy, you can lose one or two guys, and there's a regular schedule. When you start doing wholesale changes, start getting things messed up, guys just lose their shit, their mojo. In soccer, it happens a lot. And I think the thing that's so fascinating is players that are consistent are the rarity, right? Harry Kane is rare. Sonny is rare.
Knock on wood right now.
No, but Ronaldo and Messi are interplanetary, right? Guys have 5 good years and they're amazing, right? Mm-hmm. But to have 15 in a row. Anyway, so that happened. Inter shit the bed again. Conte is making up goofy excuses again. I don't know what's going to happen with him. He's a good coach, clearly, but something is wrong in Denmark with Danes.
It's interesting, too, because, except for Højbjerg. The interesting thing about Group B is that they finished in last place, right? So they don't even bump down.
They're just out.
Which for them, it might be valuable in the Serie A race.
That is an indictment. You can't play Shakhtar and get smoked. Like,
well, knowing you need to win, right?
I mean, that's where, and the thing is, it's a money thing, right? They maybe lost $10 million just from that. Anyway, so we have other teams going through: City, Porto, Liverpool, Atalanta. Well, that was a big game. They were able to beat Ajax and Ajax.
Yeah, that was another win and in game, which I love. Right, you get those in day six.
I mean, it's sad because Ajax is such a cool brand team, and like it was so great when you guys were played them and had that go on. Chelsea go through with Sevilla. Dortmund finish up their group. Lazio finds a way, beats Club Brugge. They were kind of in trouble, but they got themselves through. Juve beat Barca 3-0. Barca in crisis-ish. They're shit really bad in the league. Messi had like 7 shots on target. Buffon at 44 years old basically shut him out. But that was Ronaldo. Messi had a little bit of a storyline, but less juice. And we go to the great and powerful Group H.
A lot to talk about here. So let's talk about the interesting thing before we get into
the interesting thing.
So yeah, we had that didn't see. Yeah, why don't you go ahead, Laurent?
Yeah, yeah. So I was watching it. So Istanbul Başakşehir is playing PSG, and there's a hard tackle in like the 10th or 15th minute, and one of the bench coaches is an African. Not a North African, an African. Well,
the game was getting pretty testy to this
point. It's testy. It's sharp. It's pointed, right? And the crew is a Romanian crew. Romanian language is a Romance language. So the fourth official who's sitting between the benches is trying to let the referee on the field know, hey, this guy deserves a red. This bench, the coach is yelling at them and really giving him an earful. And apparently he goes, the black guy.
Well, hold on. Hold on.
But in Spanish, in Romanian, that's negro.
That's where the turning point in the story. But to rewind real quick, right? So remember the Aguero thing with the female Lions person?
Right.
Or whatever.
Lions
woman, I suppose. And like he was sort of intimidating to her.
He shouldn't have touched her.
He shouldn't have touched her. He shouldn't have gone near the ref. It was some semblance of abuse of referee, right?
Right.
So we both were like, hey, don't fucking do that.
Yeah, you just don't.
Nobody has said that about this one. I wonder why?
Well, why not? Now this is I'm mostly in your camp with this one. There's a weird automatic groupthink that this is a racist situation that is bad, right? Now,
right.
Can that referee, should they be referring to people as black people or whatever? I don't get, so what happens is the guy doesn't speak Romanian, the coach is an African player, and he's yelling, why'd you call me negro? Why'd you call me negro? Why'd you call me negro? Like, you can hear him. Yep. He's yelling because there's no fans there. And he's like losing it. So I'm like, this sounds bad, but I know Spanish. And if Romania is like that, he's saying, why'd you call me black? And he lost his head and was either, they had lots of conversations. What I don't understand is why there was no moment. Well, the long and short of it, they have lots and lots and lots and lots of conversations. Başakşehir and PSG walk off the field. They're like, we're not playing, right? We're done. So they walk off. Now, There's two things that are happening. There's two questions really here. Was it a racist incident? Probably not. Did it hurt the guy's feelings because he perceived it as racist? Probably, right?
Well, I think
it's clear that the guy felt like he got called a nigger, basically.
Well, hold on. The thing about this is that, like I said, he was already agitated about the game, right. A hard tackle. He was screaming. He was angry. Yeah. He was angry before that referee said one word.
Let's just assume he's angry. He thinks someone called him a racial slur.
Oh my God! Of course. So he goes from pissed off at the game, and then the ref goes
ballistic.
This guy,
right?
Right? Who was it? I don't know. The black guy. He's from fucking Besiktas. I don't know his fucking name.
No, he's African. He's from Africa.
No. What I'm saying is the ref is like, who said that? And the fourth official goes, I don't know. What are the Istanbul cultures? Which one? The black guy.
The black wine. Right.
Right. That's exactly what happened.
But he hears it as El Negrito, of course, or whatever.
Because
right?
he's already fired somebody.
So then the team, ref. In the context of where we are today, in the context of Neymar had an issue happen within this season, in the context of Black Lives Matter, in the context of Take a Knee, in the context of End Racism, this is like a worldwide thing. The players, for the first time I've ever seen, walk off the field and do not come back.
Yep.
And they essentially are like, we're not playing if those guys are refereeing. And so that happened. Now, I think what's interesting is, now we're two white guys, we'll never know, but I think that the coverage is just like, there's no benefit of the doubt. It's just like, this is great, fantastic on the players. I'm like, really?
Well,
you know what was weird? It's like the action was good. It was the wrong moment.
Right. Right.
Right.
And I think
that they did it. This is not the one to do it for.
So I kind of tried to take a seat and watch it a few times. And then I saw the halftime show and Kate Abdo was clearly kind of like shaken by what was going on. She was trying to handle the moment as best she could. And God bless her.
It's hard.
She shot over to Micah Richards, old city guy, right? He's fantastic on camera, by the way. And
he's electric.
So
he got something.
Kate Abdo goes, Micah, how would you have perceived this? And he effectively said a lot of what we've been saying. He goes, well, hold on a second. He said he was a black guy. Like, I don't know what that's supposed to, like, is that supposed to make me angry? Is that he was just kind of dissecting it. Instead of going for the sensational headline, he was like, hold the fuck on a minute. What's actually happened here?
Now here's the piece though. We don't know what was going on before, right?
Oh, we don't know a goddamn thing. And we also,
right. All we have is the sound. And then you've got this great Demba Ba thing where he's being lauded because he goes to the ref and says, why did you have to say it that way? And that it gave, what was good about that was that it gave insight into what was really affecting the players, right? They were sort of saying, hey, I'm a man. Describe me as who I am. You should know who I am. Why do I have to be referred to as black player or black man? Now, we don't live in it. We're not in the moment, but it seems sucky. Like, I want to see it when Montari was at Inter and there's a stadium full of fans and they do monkey chants and both teams walk off.
Right.
That's when I want to see it.
And that's the thing, in the context of not just the entire BLM and End Racism and all that stuff, of course. But guys, as Americans, we're sitting here talking about soccer. We have it bad as far as the racism problem in America is. You guys don't even fucking know.
It's bad in Europe.
It's bad in Europe. So yeah, with Montari, with all of these horrible incidents in Italy, just alone in Italy. Just Italy. Holy really shit, guys.
They throw bananas at players.
And what – it's so – if I had one regret about the way that everything played out, when Demba Ba went up to him and was like, why do you have to do that? If the fourth official in that moment had the gravitas to say, hey, that's on me. I fucked that up. Extended his hand and went, my sincerest apologies. If you took it that way, I did not.
Yeah. I think I'm sure if that didn't happen, then they handled it badly. Right.
I'm sure it happened off the field.
It seemed like they were just like in shock. Like the guy was just like, what the fuck is happening? Well, I didn't do anything.
The guy's got the fourth official now has the biggest deer in the headlights look you'll ever see on an official.
Yeah, he was scared.
He was scared because he was like, oh, fuck.
Because his career's over.
Well, that too. But like, he was like, he was in physical fear and fear of his career probably, right? Yeah. At the same time. So instead of having that moment of gravity,
It's tough. Like, I get it. I sympathize. I just wish it wasn't this because I feel like it really gave your fucking people who boo taking a knee, folks, ammunition. Like, he didn't do anything. But the gesture was so good. It's like, you fucked up. Like, you blew your load on the wrong, like, this is the wrong moment. This was not the time. This was a unfortunate and annoying incident and a mistake and insensitive, but not a...
Yeah.
He didn't... It's like, what are you doing, dude? This is the wrong time.
I don't want to make it
like
sound
the most
like
powerful thing you can use at the wrong moment.
Yeah. I don't want to make it sound like I'm acting like this was a performative show, right?
It wasn't. It was all emotion.
It was all genuine emotion. Again, driven initially by the tenacity of the game itself.
Yeah, because it was a foul. It was bad. Yeah,
right.
They were kicking the shit out of each other.
And that's where I'm saying, I'm like, I just wish everything wasn't so sensationalized.
But they did.
I
mean, they took a half an hour. They tried to get ready. And Beck Shakhtar was like, we're not fucking playing. We're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is weird because Turkey, they're insane there. They light coins and shoot them at each other.
Like, they're Baghdad light.
They're crazy. Like,
insane
there is
people.
Known stories of people. Like, if you hear about European nights and famous games, the famous game is Leeds go to fucking Istanbul and their fans are killed.
Yeah.
This is not 30 years ago. It's 2005. The guys got stabbed in Istanbul, same city.
Yeah, I mean, Istanbul, like I said.
They have cats and knives. That's
like really like I said with one of my buddies, which whose side do you think this guy's on? But he was like, really? That's the worst thing you've heard coming from fucking Istanbul? Really, buddy? And it's not. You know what? That was probably just the straw that broke the fucking camel's back at this point. And right?
The other question is like, if they're going to take this stance, what's going to happen in a game with fans where both teams walk off the field? You could potentially cause a major riot.
Well, because nobody's going to know why.
Right.
Right? You're in the stands. You're 35, 40,000 people. You don't know anything other than the thing I just paid way too much money for just fucking stopped for no reason. Did somebody have a heart attack? Like, what's happening here?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And then they all get on their phones. They all get on Twitter and they figure out what exactly happened. Yeah. And then it all pops off from there.
Right. Well, the other game, which doesn't even matter now.
Going into Group H... On Monday, we talked about PSG, Leipzig, and Man United. And we just spent 25 minutes saying,
we're going to go through this real quick.
Yeah. Which, by the way, they end up playing the game the next day. They won 5-1.
Yeah,
they finished top of the group.
Yeah. But Man United played in Leipzig. Nagelsmann lit Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on fire. There was amazing wing play by former City player, Angelino, and the other wing back whose name I don't know. And they're literally just pinging balls across each other because they figure out that Wan-Bissaka does not know how to defend. Like, he can't defend space. Like, he's great one-on-one, but what you see from United is they play a back three with Wan-Bissaka and I guess Shaw is the other one. So they're playing five at the back. They're doing their defensive thing. And Wan-Bissaka is just drifting into the center back position, letting Angelino just run in on both goals.
Yep.
And he's incredible. He's a bad defender, but he's an incredible – he's basically a winger. And he just – they light up within the first 20 minutes. They have two goals and one, and they have a third that's offside by a cunt hair. And it just like Man United's dead in the water. Then early in the second half – or mid-second half, like in the 69th minute. They score another to go up 3-0 on Harry Maguire and fucking David De Gea, just like, what? You get it. Guy goes in, puts it in. They're just getting killed. Now
keep in mind the context of the game, right? All United needed at kickoff
was a draw.
So they didn't need a win. So when they're down 2-0, they go, all right, we just got fucking blitzed, but hold on. We're not dead. We can come back. We can get two. Three goals down, 70 minutes gone. You're like,
the thing is, though, like, look at the United lineup. Matic, McTominay, Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw. That's basically five defenders, yep. six defenders, six mm-hmm. at the back. They're not even trying to win this game. But Telles and Wan-Bissaka are just lost. They don't know how to defend. Or Wan-Bissaka's used to being in a four where he's out on the wing already. But as a wing back, he's all over the place because the threes, and no one's telling anyone where to go. It's like they never practiced this before. And they didn't know how, it's like they didn't know how Leipzig were going to play. And they just fucking got annihilated in the first 20 minutes. It was laughable. It was like, what are you doing?
I think
now, what happens is in the late second half, somehow, some way, as usual, United come back into this game. Van der Beek made a difference. They went back to a back four. Williams came on. Pogba came on, scores on a header, and then it's on. Then all of a sudden, United, again, lost in space, completely out of their minds. Then, boom, they come back to life.
Well, and it was
really almost pulled the thing back.
It was, and let's be very clear about something. This was 100% Bruno Fernandes again, because he took the penalty, or did he draw the penalty? I believe he scored it. I know that.
No, it was a stupid penalty.
Yeah, of course it was.
Knocked the guy over.
Fucking, of course it was. But that's the other thing, right? So it's 3-1, and they're dead. They are not moving, and you breathe a little bit of life into them.
3-1, they're back.
And they go, well, you know what? Fuck it. We've got 10 minutes. We've seen this story before. We've fucking done it twice in the last 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So they go, all right, we need two goals. All we need is a draw. Fernandes, with one of the Leipzig defenders, I forget who, is just trying to shield the ball from him. Fernandes does this cheeky little play where he reaches in between the guy's legs, and he nicks it off of the defending player.
It was shoulder to shoulder, basically.
Sure, but like he, instead of the defender being able to like usher the ball out of bounds, Fernandes just nicks it off of him, and all of a sudden it's a corner kick for United.
Yeah.
And what ensues from there? Basically, it falls into Paul Pogba's lap. Bang! Now it's 3-2, and you've got 8 minutes and extra time. And it was
it got close. It was close. There was a cross that the defender almost put in.
Yes.
And very close.
it was almost an own goal. There was almost a defender ran into, I don't even know how to say, Gulaseki, the goalie. Golashki. The defender ran into him, and he held on to the ball with Fernandes literally sitting there watching,
behind
waiting.
Him, right, yeah. By the way.
So there was two opportunities for Leipzig to blow it and give United the thing they needed to escape. Didn't happen.
It would have been a draw, right? So
they had been
2 weeks before they had pulled one back, similar to the Southampton game, where you're just like, Southampton just went and kicked them in the dick, but they were able to come back. And this is sort of can go right into the week. So Man United are out. They're in the Europa League, but then this takes us into this week with the Premier League, where now my team, Manchester City, plays Man United at Old Trafford, which is lucky for me. but you know, City had a tough season against United last year, lost three games.
Yeah.
Twice. And then once in the League Cup. But before that, we have good games. Like during Mourinho, we would just light up United. Like there were games where United didn't have the ball. We had like 50 pass goals. Like the peak Guardiola seasons against United were cake. We just beat them. No problem. But then the last season was a rough season because they're a counterattacking team and they do have spirit. But I'd expect, especially the way City have been playing, that City should just put a hurt on them again. I mean, it's just, if Aguero's going to be available, if we can get the finishing right, the City will create chances. It's going to be all about finishing. Hopefully City don't have the same problem. Like if City lose this game, it'll be, they give up three shots and United score two, and City will have 20 shots and won't score. That's how City loses, always.
It'll really come down to, for me, how clinical City is, right? And I guess that's the story always. But yeah, I mean, I don't see two things. I don't see United being able to bunker the way that a Mourinho team would, or a way that, you know, other teams try and make them break you down.
Yeah.
The other thing is that Ole might be coaching for his job. in this game.
I don't think that's going to happen. The narrative is that he's always coaching for his job. As long as he doesn't get destroyed, he's fine.
Well, that's what I mean. So if with that but in mind,
City are due. City are due to fucking light somebody up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they didn't light up Fulham, which I thought that everybody thought that they were going to 5 minutes into the game. But if Ole is feeling the heat a little bit, and again, he's back in Europa League, he's scuffling at the top four. He's right there in sixth with a game in hand. So they're fine on that front for now.
I can't believe they're only like a point.
Well, that's like the thing is that since January, they've actually been quite good in the Premier League. But nonetheless, do I think that Ole will coach not to lose? That's a possibility.
He never right? He does not do that. If they play the way that they played against Leipzig, they're going to get beat.
I would agree with that.
Now, because one thing that has happened since City and United played is City are a good defensive team now. We have solved our defensive problems. We actually have good center backs. Like Diaz completely changed everything. All of a sudden, John Stones is good. All of a sudden, Laporte has a good game. City haven't given up. We're not giving up goals at all. Like nothing.
Right.
So, yes, the Tottenham game was almost the last typical game, but I don't feel like City were terrible. It was just typical, right? They two shots, two goals, and then done.
Right.
But I think I feel good about this game. I'm not too worried, but they could get hit in a break again. I am afraid of John Stones playing, even though I'm happy that he has played. I'd rather have Laporte, Diaz than Stones.
Well, yeah. Who played in midweek?
Who
played in Champions League?
Laporte
played.
Laporte and Stones because Garcia went off.
I did see that he went off in like the 30th minute or something.
But they played Ake at left back, so that might be something that Pep is thinking of to go more defensive with the four of Walker, Stones, Diaz, Ake. Which would be interesting.
Well, I think that was a total rubber match, right? Like it didn't matter at all.
Right. I mean, he wanted guys to play, but
right.
I mean, clearly you think Cancelo would play, right? So we don't know what the lineup will be. We know we know KDB will play. We know Sterling will likely play. Aguero came on and scored, which was great, but he's not ready for 90 minutes.
No. But I think he'll have a cameo to play in this game for sure.
Yeah. I don't know how Pep's going to want to play it. Either he's going to be really afraid of the counterattack or go really attack and just try and beat them. But the way City have been playing, it would be dangerous to not stay with the double pivot. But
do you think that Aguero can go 60 minutes?
No.
Do you think Pep would because he only played a midweek, right, in a little bit.
Half an hour.
He's not going – yeah, okay. I wonder
– and only if they're losing, right? Only if they need him.
Well, no, of course.
Yeah.
But so that's kind of where – it's interesting that City are just so perpetually unhappy with their striker, no matter what. Even when it is Aguero, sometimes they're like, he's getting old, he's kind of tired, this and that. His legs are going. No, he's still Sergio fucking Aguero.
But yeah, the thing is that we only have the two, right? There's not a third one,
right?
Right. They never play together ever.
Well, one of them makes the other one look great, right? Like nobody's loved Aguero more since the famous goal.
Well, no, he just scores big goals. Like
But what I'm saying is he's been out, and Jesus misses chances like it's his job.
He led the league in expected goals last year.
Yeah,
and didn't like 18, and he only scored 10.
Yeah.
So there was actually an expectation that this might be the season where Jesus. They click and he scores 25.
Right.
Because he could. He gets into spaces. He gets into places. He's really good at everything that a striker does, but he tends to shoot right at goalkeepers.
Well, it's that. And look at all the talent he's surrounded by.
Right.
It's actually really interesting. So from a quick fantasy perspective,
he should be better.
He's like, how does he suck? Right. A buddy of mine in our league has him. And he's like, they just won 5-0 and he didn't fucking get any points. I'm like, okay, it's sort of an anomaly. I don't really know. But also, City sort of just played around him.
Well, but he does stuff, right? He's doing things.
Sure. Yeah.
He's one of the best pressers from the front. He's basically I was going to say he's Danny Welbeck. Yeah. Yeah. He's a rich man's Danny Welbeck.
Right.
He kind of has that quality, like that Shane Long kind of hard running front man who can't finish. But he's really fit. Like, if you don't notice, I've watched him for years. He's way fitter than he's ever been. Like, he's getting his man body, right? He's 23. Yeah. He's not, doesn't have the chunkiness. It's really lean. He's really fit. He looks good. He runs hard. He never runs out of gas. The issue is the finishing. Like, he doesn't have all the shots, right? Mm-hmm. It's got to be a shot, a rebound, a shot again. He doesn't, like, just blow you away. Like, he never shoots from far. He never shoots from out. They put him inside the box, and that's where he is the whole time.
I think you see with him, it's like the cliche is sort of he shoots to hit the net, not to hit the corners, right? Like,
yeah, he's just shooting.
Right. Like, a Mahrez is a guy who shoots to hit the corners. And that guy,
right, and when he misses, it shoots over the bar, right?
Right, exactly. But then he hits the corners, you know?
Right, right. And it looks great. Like, he bangs it off the top and it goes in, Mahrez.
Oh, my goodness.
City fans hate him and love him and are weird.
I'm not a neutral, but I love Riyad Mahrez. I love watching him.
Let's go through the schedule. Tomorrow we've got Leeds versus West Ham. Should be fun. We love Leeds. I'm hoping Leeds bounces back. I don't really want them in the relegation fight. They're too good. And I think West Ham have gotten a lot of luck. But home to Ellen Road, I don't know what the status is of the COVID virus in Ellen Road, but if they have 2,000 fans, it'll be the loudest 2,000 fans anyone's ever fucking heard. Yeah. Because it'll be their first home game of the year. Then we have Wolves versus Aston Villa. That is a derby of Birmingham. They're on two sides of the city. Wolverhampton is on one side. Aston Villa's on the other side. I don't know if you know this, Mike. Aston Villa, as in Aston Martin, the car.
Oh, I didn't know
Aston
that.
Is a place.
Yeah, no, all right, no, I knew that.
Right, but it's a place inside of Birmingham. So they play. We love Jack Grealish. There was a meme going around. I'm not sure if it was real.
Grealish.
Very exciting stuff. He was I don't know if it's true, but I love it. him and a fine looking woman. Newcastle's back in. This is a West Brom Newcastle. Blech. If I have to watch this, I'm going to kill myself. But West Brom need wins or they'll disappear. Then we have the Manchester Derby. That's tomorrow, 9:30.
Saturday
late, we have Everton versus Chelsea. Battle of Blues. This is another test for Chelsea. Like, if they can put away Everton and keep putting teams away, it seems like their defense is completely revamped. Mendy for fucking signing of the season. Silva signing of the season. You wonder why the fuck these teams don't just sign old center backs paired with another guy with young legs. Sort of feels like Johnny Evans and Soyuncu, right? Mm-hmm. These old center backs, just get one. Hey,
right.
Arsenal, sign Lewis Dunk. What are you doing?
Sergio Ramos, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Sergio Ramos with Varane. Varane's terrible without him. Awesome with him.
Yep. Real quick on that game, interesting. If Chelsea want to make up ground on Tottenham and Liverpool, what a better way, right? Like, Spurs lost to Everton and Liverpool famously with that VAR call, they drew. So this is a team, and it's not how the table is necessarily made, but these are the two teams you're chasing. You got to win all the games you should be winning, but also win the games the guys in front of you aren't.
Right.
A good example for them to do that. And they go to the road, right? They're at
Everton. Yeah. I think they may have fans. I don't know. There's different tiers in different towns in London.
They do. Yeah, because Liverpool has fans at Anfield. Right. So, I mean, if there's fucking down the road.
Then we've got our love affair teams, Southampton versus the poor Sheffield United. It looks like Sheffield United's in real fucking trouble now. They can't score at all. They only have 1 point.
I don't know, maybe it's the colors. They've got a Sunderland vibe to them this year.
Oh, they do. They do have a Sunderland vibe.
It makes me sad.
Yeah, they do have they're red striped. So they do feel Sunderland. We may have to say goodbye. I really love them. I hope they find a way because I could do without Fulham and I could do without Burnley. Palace, Tottenham, this is a London derby. Zaha's there.
It's a trap game. Big time trap game.
Be careful. I'd like to see Tottenham take it to him. Like, play. This is a team.
So this is going to be the litmus test, right? So you've had three big-ish games, right? Like, City, Chelsea, Arsenal.
This is the gimme. This is the one you got to go get. Yeah.
Right, exactly. You're not going to be able. And in fact, ironically, you may lose the game playing against a team who's going to play that style, right? With
Zaha. They're going to play the same, right? Palace is going to play a 5-4-1, right? They're going to play deep. But with Zaha there, fear the Zaha. I watched a video. He's playing with a two up top now rather than on the wing. So he's closer to goal. He has, I think, 5 or 6 goals already, which is unusual for him.
Last season, he missed a few games.
He had one.
And I worry about, I think Toby Alderweireld and Eric Dier have been phenomenal, especially in the last month, but they're not the fastest. Right. They're not going to be able to keep up in a foot race with Zaha, and that's how he could get loose. So,
yeah, I mean, we'll it depends. And I would expect Højbjerg will play, but I would hope that Sissoko's not playing so that you have one more creative player if you even have one. But we'll see how that
goes. I would think we're going to start with Sissoko, and I think that we bring on, well, first of all,
you want Ndombele and Lo Celso together.
Ideally, yes, but I don't think that.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you want to play. You want to play a 4-3-3 or a 4 whatever, right? You want to play it right. with Højbjerg playing the only holder with the two eights. You play City style with the two going up and down. But I don't think that's how they'll play. They'll play with the double.
I agree. I think that especially based on today, Lo Celso played a full 90, so I don't think he's going to play.
I mean, Mourinho may just be an asshole and just go to Højbjerg and be like, "Sit on Zaha. I don't want him to get the ball."
That's possible. And
I mean, that's so negative and disgusting, but this will be a tough game. I would fear a draw. Fulham, Liverpool, fucking
not in the face.
Fucking Liverpool are so goddamn good. They're the best team, even without Van Dijk. They just are. I fucking hate them. Now that they don't have Alisson, now they have a young goalkeeper. They're fine. Fucking pieces of shit. My other love affair, Leicester City versus Brighton. Leicester have been sputtering a little bit, but Brighton are also sputtering. They're at the bottom of the table. They need to get results. As much as I love them, they are. So from the bottom 10, they are the second. No, they're not the second best goal differential. The bottom 10 are Wolves, Palace, Aston Villa, Newcastle, Leeds, Arsenal, Brighton. Arsenal, 15th.
They're the third Fulham, best. Burnley.
Right. But they are only at a -3, right? Villa are at a +7 because of basically the Liverpool game. But Brighton should not be down here with these teams, and they are, because they just can't seem to get out of their own way. Arsenal play Burnley. That is a referendum. If Arsenal cannot get 3 points versus Burnley, gonna fire fucking Arteta. I mean, it's like, what's going on?
It seems you've come around to my side of the story, right?
Like, what is going on? They're dying.
I'm excited. I don't know how many games a year I will root for Burnley. Probably 4, maybe 5. This is one of them. I'm gonna enjoy watching Arsenal without any creativity in the midfield whatsoever.
Oh god.
Try to break down the 11-man brick wall defense.
And then, Arsenal at home, they're bad. But the thing is funny. I trust Burnley more in this game.
I have won. The X factor in this game is Danny Ceballos, right?
He's got to make passes.
He has to be the locksmith
creator. Yeah,
right, for Arsenal. If he's just not fucking nobody is.
And dust the most off, important, just dust off Erzo and fucking put him in. Just swallow your goddamn pride. Tell the Chinese to fuck themselves and be like, we got to win this game. I'm putting in Mesut Ozil.
Well, the other thing that's so interesting is that Lacazette.
Is he even practicing? Can he play? Like, where I don't know.
He's tweeting. He's tweeting, making fun of Piers Morgan, and I'm enjoying that. Oh, that's been fantastic. They've been arguing on Twitter, and one has 25 million followers and one has 1.5 or something. So it's been kind of lopsided. It's been fun.
All of Turkey is behind Ozil and all the Muslims.
Aubameyang's speed counts for fucking nothing in this game.
Nope. Zero.
I'm excited for them to drop points again.
Here's the thing. Arsenal, let me give you a tip. Sign fucking Tarkowski. I don't care if he can't pass. He would give you personality. He could be the new Tony Adams. Like, he just has to pass it to the next guy who passes. Sometimes you don't have to build out of the back. You just need a guy who will fuck people up. Tarkowski for Arsenal. Lewis Dunk for Arsenal. One of these English defenders who are just like, I will fuck you up. Get away from my goal.
Oh, man.
Where are they?
They're going to put James Tarkowski in the 10 role, right? That's how dire it's getting.
I mean, like, I just don't understand. I'm stupid. I don't know anything about football. Maybe I'm dumb. But I see guys like Vestergaard, who is carrying the ball, is 8 feet tall. Like, why can't Vestergaard play for Arsenal? Like, don't tell me you can't find a defender when you go fucking sign David Luiz, who basically fucks something up every game. He killed someone. He almost cracked someone's head open.
They tried to go by your, you know, the old center back theory. And that one, they're like, oh, shit, this guy kind of sucks, though.
Yeah, but you knew that he sucked.
No, I have a theory on David Luiz. I don't know if I've told you this before. My thinking is that he's so fucking bad at Arsenal, it cannot be on purpose. So I see David Luiz as a double agent. Right?
He was bad on the Chelsea payroll.
He's still on the Chelsea payroll, and he went from Chelsea to Arsenal because he knew he wouldn't play anymore in Chelsea, and he went to torpedo Arsenal from the inside out and ruined Matteo Guendouzi, who sucked anyway, while he was there. He's like, hey, don't cut your fucking hair. You can look like me and suck at football simultaneously.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that team. It's just like, can you never play fucking Granit Xhaka again, please?
He's brutal.
Arsenal their poor fans are just like dying. They're not good.
No.
Like, they're just not good. They don't have players. Like, what are they doing?
And I don't want to dip too far deep into the fan thing again, but you've been watching this team your whole life. It's nothing fucking else to do. Yeah. You know that this team isn't very good. So for you to act surprised when your team sucks balls and is in 15th place, that's on you, right? Like on some level, detach a little. Because they're like, you walked into the season going, these guys aren't very good.
Yeah, right? I just don't get it. It's just like, it's so weird because at the back half of the season and the first couple games of the season, it really felt like Arteta had something going and they were hitting teams on the break and being defensive and Aubameyang was scoring goals. He signs a contract. Guys don't sign contracts. It doesn't just suck. Like, how that happened to Arsenal twice in a row? That's fucked up. they just don't have it. It's fucking shocking. Is there anything else?
That's it, really. I'm looking at the schedule. There's, like I said, like we were talking about, United City's the big game. There's a couple of other kind of undercards, if you will. We do have the Champions League draw on Monday and the Europa League draw, as it were, as well. Okay. Something I was thinking about that.
Wait a minute. Why are we playing? We got games on Wednesday.
We do? Holy dog shit. Well, we'll talk about those on Monday.
That's a big game at noon. Oh my God. That's a night game. It's going to be cold as fuck.
Oh boy. That's a fun one. So we'll talk about those the next match week on Monday. Think games are going to be coming super thick and fast.
Oh my God, they are. Then again on Saturday. What the fuck are they doing? Then
again on Tuesday, Wednesday. So it's the welcome to the festive period. We're getting
And then the FA
Cup. Finishing up the games so that we can do the Euros in June. That's basically what we're doing here. but yeah, like I said, the Europa League draw is after the Champions League draw. And I kind of, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, why would you have the third place game after the gold medal game? Like,
these English people are fucking more.
That's Europe. That's Europe.
They're just dumb. Like, yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I have a subscription to The Athletic, but you get $1 off for the first year. It's $1 a month. But there's a whole article about the CFG group, the City group, and how they're doing their whole thing. And it's just like people are just like, why would they create a whole business around football? I'm like, what are you? It boggles the mind how they don't commercialize everything. Or that they're shocked. They're just like, I can't believe they're trying to make money. What do you mean they're trying to make a closed league that's franchises with all of Europe? That's crazy. Like,
it'll still never register to me that, like, it's so commercialized. Like, the actual product, right? Like, the jerseys are the most commercialized thing in all of sports. No American – I mean, we have some ads on some jerseys, but not that.
But we have breaks in the game to show ads. Yeah, so they don't have that.
Okay, that's fair.
Because they could just put it in.
Right.
Right? If you were going to do soccer for business, you'd put a break in. You'd just be like, okay.
Water breaks.
We just break it into quarters.
Yeah.
And just show ads in between. Like, why is halftime only 15 minutes? I just make it longer. Yeah. Because it seems like they do a commercial, they do a bit, they do another commercial, the game's back.
The game's back. Like,
somebody took a shit, and that's not even long enough to take a shit. No wonder Eric Dyer had to go in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
My goodness.
Shits for all. I'll speak to you Monday. Hopefully, I will be happy. My medication is really helping me from being worried, which I don't like. I like to be angry about these games, but it's...
Yeah, you're usually pretty on edge and self-loathing and all that stuff.
I know.
You might have this to ship me some of that stuff.
It's terrible. Lexapro sucks. I have no fear. I have nothing. I'm empty inside. It sucks. I want to be upset and worried. Desperately. I'm desperate.
Take a day off from him on Saturday. You're going to call me crying at halftime.
I'm desperate for anxiety. Please, give me back my anxiety. That okay. Later on, Mike.
The Squeaky Bum Time Podcast with Mike Salerno and Laurent Cortines. This was a Crap Football, Crap Pundit production. We will return on Mondays and Thursdays for the Premier League season. We will talk about soccer and other things that interest us. Mike is crazy. Laurent is insane. That's why it works.